Welcome back to In the Moment. Sean Sherman is known in the culinary world as the Sioux Chef. Born in Pine Ridge, Sherman is an Oglala Lakota Sioux. He has been cooking across the U.S. and the world for the last 30 years after getting his start in Western South Dakota. Sherman's main culinary focus has been on the revitalization and awareness of indigenous food systems in a modern culinary context. He has studied extensively to determine the foundations of these food systems, which include knowledge of Native American farming techniques, wild food usage and harvesting, land stewardship, hunting and fishing, food preservation, and more. Sherman is the author of The Sioux Chef's Indigenous Kitchen. He visited with Prairie Public's Ashley Thornburg last week, and they began by discussing his early days as the Sioux Chef.
Well, really out of necessity, growing up the way I did, after my mom moved my sister and I off of Pine Ridge Reservation and we moved to a small town called Spearfish, South Dakota, she was going to school and working like three jobs. And I just started cooking at home at first because we were pretty latchkey during the 80s. And then I started taking restaurant jobs as soon as I could get one. So as soon as I was 13, I got a job at a restaurant. It was a steakhouse called The Sluice, so it kind of had a mining theme because we were in the Black Hills, and it was just a very typical kind of American-style steakhouse. But I started working at that very young age, and all through high school, all through college, and then after college, I moved to Minneapolis. And since I'd had so many years of already being in the restaurant business and developed a really strong working ethic, then I just moved my way up really fast, and I became a chef in the cities at a pretty young age.
Do you remember what you were cooking at home during your latchkey kid days?
Oh, it was kind of whatever was around. I got used to being extremely thrifty. I remember learning how to make sloppy joes out of just ketchup and mustard.
You said you were working in restaurants, one of your first restaurants, typical American fare. And your main focus is going back to indigenous food, to Native American food, food that existed here on this land pre-contact, pre-colonization. When did you really start this philosophy? Do you remember?
The first time I had tried to do an indigenous menu was way back in 2004 for a project that didn't go through, but it gave me kind of a start of it. And then a few years later, I was actually living in Mexico, and I kind of had an epiphany moment of just like seeing it all of a sudden and realizing like the lack of indigenous food out there at all. Like there was just no indigenous restaurants. You know, I could find food from all over the world and nothing that spoke to the land and the history and the culture of the places that we were standing. So it just really kind of shot me on the path to want to learn and understand more. So for me, I spent a few years just researching and studying, and then I started to slowly do dinners and events based around indigenous foods until I got to the point where I kind of, just jumped into it, started my own business, and went forward trying to work on my own, doing only healthy indigenous foods that were very regional, so not even fusionizing native foods, but really just keeping it to the area that I was at.
Because when we say native food, there are more than 500 federally recognized tribes and pueblos, and then there are several more that aren't even recognized by the U.S. government. And
yeah,
lumping a term like Native American food or indigenous food, when we might even be talking about populations indigenous to Mexico or indigenous to Peru. So are you... You must just be constantly studying food.
Yeah, it's kind of created a lifetime's worth of learning that I will never see the end through. But, you know, we've kind of shifted our focus on North America. So we're really looking at all of the indigenous knowledge around food systems from Mexico all the way up through Alaska and everything that kind of takes place within indigenous food systems from, you know, indigenous agricultural techniques and permaculture and wild foods and ethnobotany and oceanography and cooking technique and food preservation. And the list just kind of goes on and on. So there's a lot to learn and there's no shortage of it out there.
Well, where do you find this information? We're talking about a time period where colonization took away language, took away food systems, took away cultural practices. I imagine there's got to be some gaps in the knowledge here.
Definitely, but over time, we've been able to learn a lot more because since we started to put together all the pieces that make up an indigenous food system, and as we've been lucky to travel around and visit lots of different tribal regions and really see firsthand a lot of the wild foods that are out there, and you know, working with groups like I'm on the board with Savers Exchange and Dream Wild Health, which is a farm in Minneapolis, that have a lot of the ancient heirloom indigenous seeds, and just looking at a lot of that agricultural product. But, you know, there's so many resources, you know, being able to work with museums and look at a lot of their archives and a lot of these things that they have in their archives that they don't even know the wealth of it. You know, there's just so much knowledge out there. And it's really just been, you know, so eye-opening. And there's just so much to put together, and there's just so much preservation that we can pull out of it, and revitalization on top of that, you know, to really make it a better piece. And we've never tried to set out to do a complete timepiece and cook like it's only 1491 or whatever era pre-contact might occur in, but we're just really trying to understand those lessons of the past and see what pieces are still around us today and apply that to now. So we're becoming something different. It's like an evolution of the foods overall.
Does ceremony focus into your work?
Yeah, the spirituality is a huge part of it, and it's a huge commonality that you're going to find in all the indigenous cultures because, you know, there's so much diversity with spirituality and thoughts and religion, but everybody has such a deep spiritual connection to the plants and the animals and the people and their families and everything. So, you know, ceremony is something that we hold very dear, and especially as we're doing kind of modern businesses, like with the catering company in the city of Minneapolis and things like that, we almost always offer, you know, a spirit and offering plate to the guests that are gathered there with us and share a lot of that spirituality with the people who are, you know, sharing the food with us.
Did you grow up spiritual?
You know, mine's kind of a different story because my mother's family had been converted to Episcopalian.
Okay.
I went to the Episcopalian church a lot. My dad's family had been converted to Jehovah's Witness. So I ended up going to a lot of Jehovah's Witness events. And then growing up on Pine Ridge with the Lakota around and always having Lakota ceremony and religion and spirituality and everything, those were like three completely opposite religions compared to each other. And I really, you know, I really appreciated the Lakota religion. I just really appreciated that thankfulness for everything, you know, with the animals and the plants and the people and the history, and just, you know, how much spirit went into it. But yeah, seeing like a three different religions growing up is quite a spectacle for a young kid.
Yeah. Your cookbook came out this year. It's called The Sioux Chef's Indigenous Kitchen. It is beautiful. I got a copy of it. I am not at all ashamed to say that sometimes I have forgotten to actually cook the recipes because I'm just spending so much time just reading and being absorbed in the book. So I just want to say congratulations on this book. How does it feel to see this out there?
Oh, you know, it was such a lot of hard work, and Beth Dooley was so amazing to work with because she had written, you know, 10 other cookbooks at that point, and she's just a wealth of knowledge on how to put this all together. And plus me, as my business was just kind of booming, it was so hard to keep me pinned down in any one place, so I never could have done it without her. And it's just so great to have this physical piece that, you know, for us, we just really see it as a educational piece that we can share with other people because it has over 100 recipes using only indigenous ingredients, and we were able to sprinkle a lot of the philosophy around and a lot of the thoughts around throughout the book, and we really feel like it's just a great kind of starter book for people to think about the land and the history and the plants and the animals of the region that they're in, because no matter where you are in North America, there's going to be beautiful indigenous histories and there's going to be beautiful indigenous foods.
What about when it comes to trying to get some of those ingredients? A lot of this you wouldn't find at a grocery store.
Some of them you wouldn't find at grocery stores for sure, especially when we're talking about the natural and wild foods that are just around us. But it's really trying to get people to be curious about the plants that are growing near them, because the more you start learning about plants in your area, the more you're going to start seeing food. And there's just so much that really defines our region so nicely with all these flavors. And, you know, cooks should be very excited about utilizing a lot of these flavors that are literally right outside the door. So my business partner, Dana Thompson, always calls it ironically foreign.
That is a great line. Do you run into issues with the USDA who might not want you to be gathering your own mushrooms that are growing off of a birch tree or what have you?
You know, we have not directly had that. And a lot of the wild foods that we're utilizing, we're just utilizing from the farms that we work with.
Okay.
Because a lot of their pollinators are pieces that we utilize, like bergamots and things like that, hyssop. A lot of the trees are right there, like the cedar and the pine. So, like, we're using, you know, a space that has a license to sell vegetables, and these just happen to be plants that we're utilizing on their property. So it kind of works out nicely that way. But we're very careful, and there's been a lot of research into the pieces that we're using. And when it comes to mushrooms, we're very careful because there is mushrooms is, it's not botany. It's a whole different world, you know.
Yeah. Well, is that part of why you have a culinary ethnobiologist on your team?
Ethnobotanist?
Yeah, or ethnobotanist. Yeah,
I think every culinary team should have a botanist at least, because all we do is play with plants, and it's much easier to teach a botanist how to cook than a cook botany. So.
We are visiting with Sean Sherman. He is called The Sioux Chef, S-I-O-U-X, and his new cookbook is called The Sioux Chef's Indigenous Kitchen. And a minute ago, Sean, you mentioned that this book came out at a time when business was booming for you. You and your business partners are working on not just one, but two restaurants. The Kickstarter campaign that you did for the first restaurant was breaking records left and right when it comes to crowdfunding. Give us an update on when we can eat in your restaurants.
Well, you know, we just got rid of the food truck this last year. We sold it to the White Earth Reservation, which they're rebranding, and they're going to utilize that truck to drive healthy indigenous foods around their reservation. And we were just getting ready for these restaurant projects. So one project is part of the nonprofit, which is North American Traditional Indigenous Food Systems, or NATIFS.org is what the acronym is. And so NATIFS.org is, we're trying to build a restaurant right now here in Minneapolis that will have a restaurant and a training center under the name the Indigenous Food Lab, which will be a place where people can come to us and take classes with us if they're curious about any of the pieces of indigenous food systems. So wild foods, ethnobotany, native agriculture, cooking, food preservation, all those pieces, we want to create a place for people to come and learn. And the restaurant there, we want people to come and actually work with us, the people that want to gain skills working with indigenous foods and work alongside us so they can take those skills back to wherever they may be from. The other restaurant project is with the Waterworks Project and the Minneapolis Park Board. And this project will be downtown Minneapolis, right in front of where the Stone Arch Bridge is. And it's a really unique spot because it's got a lot of historic and spiritual Dakota places right there along the river.
Mm-hmm.
So it's right in front of some of these really ancient Dakota places that would be, by placing an indigenous restaurant there, we'll be able to, you know, share the Dakota perspective of the land and the history that's right there and has always been there in front of downtown Minneapolis, even though a lot of that natural beauty of where what was St. Anthony Falls have been destroyed because of the logging industry and things like that. The places are still there and the names are still there, and we're just really excited to be able to tell that story and to serve really healthy indigenous foods along the riverside for, you know, the first time in a long time.
What are the biggest misconceptions about native food?
You know, I think people are just really curious, but I think because of our lack of indigenous education in general, like we aren't taught a lot of indigenous education growing up. We don't understand Native American people across the U.S. Because it's just the way our history books are. So I think a lot of it is just curiosity, and people are just trying to understand what it is. And, you know, we push away from fry bread because we've pushed away from colonial ingredients. So we are personally not using any wheat flour or dairy or processed sugar. And we're not even utilizing beef, pork, or chicken just because we're showcasing all these alternative proteins that are all around us. And I think a lot of people are just, they're not sure exactly what is Native American cuisine, but We're just kind of opening up the doors and trying to lead by example and partnering with other great, talented Native chefs around the country to help share that story. So all this work is so much bigger than all of us. And, you know, for me, there's, you know, going into it without any ego and just really trying to, you know, share what we're learning and showcase how we're going about it. And just getting people to think and have a better understanding about Native American culture through food, because being able to understand somebody else's, another culture's food is just a really great way to understand that culture, because food is such a cultural identifier for you no matter who you are. And food just happens to be the one thing that we all have in common as humans.
Food trends, they come around, and sometimes they last for a year, sometimes they last a little longer. Right now, there's a big push on hyper-local or eating seasonally or cutting out a lot of processed foods and no sugar and no wheat. And are you just kind of sitting over here raising your hand going, hello?
Yeah, a little like, bit sometimes. Like, this is just kind of the way the diet's always been, you know? We've always been all those pieces, and people have tried to tag us to be like, oh, well, you're just like paleo. And like, well, actually, we're not, because we are extremely diverse. The work that we're doing really resonates with indigenous cultures around the world, especially cultures that have been somewhat decimated by colonial practices. And it's just preserving and relearning a lot of those knowledges around food and around landscape and around medicine because of that, too. So there's just a lot that anybody can benefit from really understanding how Indigenous peoples were surviving in certain regions for so many centuries.
Do you feel different? I presume you spend at least a good chunk of your time eating Indigenously. Do you feel different in your own skin from when you were eating before and now switching back to this ancestral diet?
Definitely, because, you know, another commonality with all these indigenous diets is just this low glycemic factor. It's just a super healthy diet. You know, there's very low sugars. There's lots of, there's light salts. There's really great fats. There's really healthy proteins. There's an immense amount of plant diversification. And it's just an ideal diet, you know, for so many areas. We, you know, you just feel good. Like when we're doing these dinners with indigenous only ingredients, people just feel better because it's not weighted down with all those carbs and all those open, empty calories. And, you know, it's just your body just burns better that way. And you just, you don't feel bloated and heavy and slow. After you eat these, you feel energized and just really good. And it's, we just really want to get this food out there, especially into communities that suffer so much with food illnesses like type 2 diabetes and obesity and heart disease. I mean, there wasn't even tooth decay for a lot of the indigenous peoples of the Americas before colonialism. So we just really feel like, again, anybody can benefit from a beautiful diet like this that just happens to be so regional and so historical.